Messiah's Branch Broadcast, a one-hour prophecy program on the American Voice Radio Network, featuring Pastor Dan of the Messiah's Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
Greetings, saints, and welcome to the Messiah's Branch Prophecy Hour. We're broadcasting live from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. Today's date is November 3rd, 2016. Saints, the world is in turmoil. Most just don't realize it, but we are in that time of the end, and that's the time before Messiah's glorious return. So it's time to get out of sin, the world, and look to the holy city. Look to the one who suffered and died for you. Hear the sound of the shofar. Heed the warning. Get right now before it's too late. Please, you need to make this choice tonight. If you need help after this program, call me. I'll pray for you or with you. If you get the machine, please leave your name, your number, your prayer request, and or message. The phone number, of course, is 620-878-4682. 620-878-4682. And an emergency, my cell phone number is 316-619-4886. And I want to thank you folks that do keep that as an emergency number. Anyway, you can always find updates with the breaking news, our ministry, radio program archives, our email address, and our mailing address, all of those things, and even our, all those things at our blog, which is simply prophecyhour.com. And if you just want audio archives, try messiahsbranch.com, because at prophecyhour.com, we put the latest breaking news on there all the time. And some people, they just don't like the news. So if you want without the news, messiahsbranch.com, but still there's a very lot of important things at prophecyhour.com, because that is the hub for all of our ministries. Also, check out branch.podomatic.com. You know, even though there's links on both those websites, they all actually lead back to branch.podomatic.com for the archives. So pray about that. Anyway, all these places are really good with smartphones. And I've been working, and I just got to share this with you real quick. You know, I spent about 4 hours last night working on different apps. One of them, I made a really cool app for a thing, and then at the end of it, it was supposed to be free. Well, it was only free for 5 days, and then after that, they wanted to charge me a huge amount of money. There's some other really cool ones up there, but I haven't had the time to do it. 5 hours is a lot of time for me. And so if one of you folks out there that know the Internet real well that might want to do this for us and make one of these free apps, email me or call me, because I could sure use the help. I'm going to try and get my son to do it, but I don't know if he'll have the time. Anyway, remember, prayer requests can be sent by United States Postal Service and email with your return address and your phone number to call you back. These requests, if you wish, will be taken to the Mission Church, anointed with oil and prayed over, and sent back to you at your request with absolutely no solicitations for donations. And we do have a prayer request form on the right-hand side of Prophecy Hour and messiahsbranch.com pages. Remember, we are a national satellite program which is simulcast live on the net internationally, so pray about supporting airtime. And I want to thank our listener base that is worldwide in places like Lisbon, Portugal, Cape Town, South Africa, Tehran, Iran, Manila, Philippines, Espoo, Finland, Melbourne, Australia, and core cities in the good old USA, such as San Jose, California, Omaha, Nebraska, Las Vegas, Nevada, Northport, Alabama, Austin, Texas, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and there's been an explosion in the last couple of weeks of people listening to our programs, and I strongly bet that it's because of the election. And let's not forget the folks in Wichita, Kansas, which remains the largest group of listeners to our radio programs, that is, when they podcast later tonight. I have no idea who's listening right now to the live broadcast, by the way, folks. Anyway, now prayer, we'll get on with tonight's guest. Dear Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name, I pray. Father, I pray that radio tonight goes according to your will and not my will, nor our guest's will. So, Father, please give everyone out there ears in which to hear the truth, and in this case, Father, to act on the truth. Amen and amen in Yeshua's name. Well, with the election just days away, there are still members of the Republican Party that refuse to vote for Trump. While they say they will not vote for Hillary, that's still a vote for her and a vote to take your guns. She has a clear history of being anti-gun, and with me, a history about, I believe, with about everything that is just plain anti-good. Also, there are several states that have gun rights in their state ballots. What is wrong with Americans? It really is God and guns that make you free and will keep you free. Tonight, to talk about some of this, is Larry Pratt. And while he's not been on with us a while, he's been on this program many times. Pratt has been the executive director of Gun Owners of America for over 30 years. GOA is a national membership organization of 300,000 Americans dedicated to promoting their Second Amendment freedom to keep and bear arms. GOA lobbies for the pro-gun position in Washington, D.C., and is involved in firearm issues in the states. GOA's work includes providing legal assistance to those involved in lawsuits with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and the Federal Firearms Enforcement Agency. Pratt has held elective office in the state legislature. In the state legislature of Virginia, serving in the House of Delegates. So, welcome back, Larry. Are you there with me?
Well, good to be with you. Here I am indeed clinging to my God and my guns.
Yeah, amen. And so are a lot of Americans. The thing that really perplexes me, Larry, is the Republicans and others that are supposed to be God-fearing that just don't get how important this election is. This may be the most important election in America's history. What do you think?
Well, it's certainly not going to be an insignificant one. That's for very, very sure. I think that if people stop and think, if they're concerned about for instance, the concern of the Supreme Court and the direction that it's almost bound to take, because we're looking at one vacancy right now. The president has nominated a man hard left to be the replacement for the vacancy created by the death of Justice Scalia. But there could well be one or two more, just given the age of the some of those on the court. It's not like a bunch of spring chickens. So we're looking at, within the next 4 years, at a very strong likelihood that there's going to be a new court, and it is either going to head more or less the way Scalia had been directing it, or it's going to go the way Hillary Clinton has said she wants it to go. She has taken specific issue with the court's ruling in the Heller case, brought by a security guard that worked with a gun during the day, but he couldn't take it home, couldn't be trusted by the District of Columbia government, and he took that to court and won the recognition of his individual right to keep and bear arms, but that only applied within the District of Columbia, and so Otis McDonald, who's now going on to be with the Lord, took a similar case for the rest of the country to court, and that became another precedent-setting decision by the court, recognizing that, wow, the Second Amendment actually protects, it doesn't give a right, but it does protect the right, or even you might say guarantees the right, to keep and bear arms as an individual. And the kind of arms that keep the government concerned should they be going off thinking about tyranny, arms that might be sufficient to keep the government under control, which was the meaning of the Second Amendment. So we've had this very significant court history, and Hillary Clinton has said she is specifically against that. And yet, of course, as is the habit of many Democrats and some Republican politicians, say, well, I support the Second Amendment. Perhaps your listeners are familiar with Senator Charles Schumer of New York. He's distinguished himself through his time in Congress as a member of the House and now in the U.S. Senate as being very, very hostile to the Second Amendment. And to my knowledge, he's never voted for any pro-Second Amendment piece of legislation, and he's voted for every single anti-Second Amendment piece of legislation. And yet I heard him with my own ears say, I support the Second Amendment. You know, with friends like that, we really don't need a whole bunch of enemies.
Well, you know, just a second here. That's the other thing that really kind of perplexes me about politics nowadays. I mean, I'm 61, and I just don't get it, because when I was younger, you know, a lot younger, I suppose, that I do remember the day that if a politician was actually caught lying, it was always, you know, under the thing that, yeah, politicians lie, but still mostly they didn't blatantly lie like now, but the people just... they would run away from them. But now it seems like to people it just doesn't matter. What do you think about that?
Well, I think there has been an erosion in our morality so that we're more accepting of that kind of dishonest behavior. And, of course, what we're willing to tolerate, we're likely to get that and much more, because people always push limits. And politicians are kind of like children, and they keep pushing the limits. And if they don't get their knuckles wrapped in election time, they're likely to keep on pushing the limits. So we've got our work cut out for us. I think that as much as I wasn't happy with the ultimate Republican nominee, certainly had preferred Senator Cruz, Donald Trump has... maybe I'm just smoking happy weed, but I actually think that this guy that started out as a liberal Democrat in New York City, and that was his political world. I'm not sure how much of a developed political philosophy he had. That was just the world that he was moving in. But I think he has been moving toward a more principled position. His Second Amendment position has been acceptable. He still supports the no-fly list concept, which is totally absent of any due process. You can get your name put on there. Only the shadow knows how you might end up on that list.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me say something right here.
It's on the list. Then we know the problem.
The mysterious no-fly zone list. I do believe that. I just kind of think that because I've seen Trump change his position, you know, on different things, I do believe that maybe once he gets into office and he gets educated people around him telling him about the no-fly list, you know, that he would indeed change it, because, yeah, anybody could get on that list, and there's no process to get off.
It's not as funny. In that last debate, I have, to my recollection, not heard a more vivid defense of the right to life than Donald Trump. They were discussing the partial birth abortion, and he obviously has been made familiar with it. I think rather more so than when he first discussed the issue. When he was debating Senator Cruz, who, as I say, was our first choice, he supported the opposed Planned Parenthood in the same sentence. But over the time between that debate and his final debate with Hillary Clinton, he developed a rather clear position, and he described in somewhat vivid terms just how ghastly late-term abortion is. And I thought, you know, that gives me some hope that this liberal Democrat from New York City would make basically the final words of his campaign, at least in that debate with Clinton, and right. that's the way he chose to present himself. That's not quite the same Donald Trump that got started in this thing, perhaps as an eighth grade popularity contest. I don't know. But his choice of the campaign manager is a fairly well-known conservative consultant, Kellyanne Conway. And his choice of vice president, and I've had at least, I think, one disagreement with Mr. Pence, but if I only have one disagreement with somebody, that might be fewer than I've had with my own self over the years. I was extremely encouraged by the choice of Mike Pence, now the governor of Indiana, but a fellow that I had been able to observe closer up as a congressman from Indiana. And on most issues, Mike Pence has been right down the line. So I don't, of all the people that Donald Trump could have chosen as a running mate, that he ended up with Mike Pence is certainly not what I would have expected from this right. New York liberal Democrat. So I think he has been forced to think about issues probably in any depth more than he ever did in his life, but he's been busy making himself filthy rich, and now all of a sudden he's in a different environment, a different world, and somewhat different, certainly different concepts that are involved. Right. And I'm encouraged. And the other thing that I see in Donald Trump that I like is that unlike John McCain, the senator from Arizona and the loser for a presidential bid, and Mitch and Mr. Romney, who, nice enough guy, but no fighter there, Donald Trump actually fights back. He doesn't let the people walk all over him. And, it's been some time since we've had a flag bearer of the president that actually fought.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually amazing to see any, he renewed my face, so to speak, in people speaking up. Because the last two elections, we have to say Sarah Palin, she did try and fight. But, as far as McCain and Romney, I couldn't believe Romney. Come on, Romney. I felt like going over and grabbing him and said, hey, get out there and speak up, talk. It was like he didn't really want to win. That was because, I remember politicians used to fight. And so I am encouraged about Trump fighting. And I am, something else that encourages me about Trump. I think it was James Dobson article that I read today, and it was out of Charisma News. I do know that. And it was saying that he knows the person that got Trump to accept Christ. And that was recently. And, you can see, I believe that in the sense that of his repentative nature over what he, over the thing that he did say, which, I don't hold a lot of candle to what he said about the women in the sense that men privately, they talk. But it doesn't matter because he repented of it. He repented of it.
When Donald Trump first said I'm presuming that he did say it, he was a liberal Democrat in New York City. Let's just lay the cards out on the table. That, for a Democrat, is a resume enhancer.
Right.
Talking like that. And I don't think it's as common among Republicans. I know it's not as common among Christians who are Republicans. It'd be very surprising, in fact, to hear someone who says, I'm a Christian, and then talk like that. And so, I can forgive Donald Trump for some of the things that he's said and done, because it's quite possible this is not the same guy that came to public attention, say, 20 years ago.
Right. I don't think we're dealing with the same guy that started this election off. I really believe, you know, his words was that he had traveled the country and the people's stories got him. You know, I feel like I've seen change in him just as he's going, especially, like I say, when he brought out the abortion thing. And he said, likely, he said the natural course of things, wasn't that what he said, Roe versus Wade, with the people that he wants to appoint on the bench, it would probably be reversed. And that was a strong statement.
He probably made a clearer statement than John McCain I can remember ever making. And McCain has been identified as a pro-lifer. Romney didn't really know where he was. I'm not sure he ever figured it out a whole lot throughout the campaign. He's just a nice guy, a very successful businessman. I was able to move onto the position of voting for Trump after my disappointment in the primary, because when looking at his opponent, Mrs. Clinton, there was a clear distinctive early on, and even if Donald Trump were not a work in progress, as you and I both hope and maybe have seen some signs of, he is not trying to destroy the United States. Hillary right. Clinton is. He is a Marxist, a self-proclaimed Alinskyite, small-c communist Marxist. That is her worldview. She wrote it in a senior thesis at Wellesley College. You can get a copy of it online. She has never recanted it, and that makes her someone who is more self-identified and self-conscious as a communist destroyer than even Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And let alone all the other things that we're hearing. And selling, come on, all this talk about Trump and the Russians, when it's Hillary and the Russians, after all, she did sell the uranium to them. We're going to go to a break.
We're going to go to a break
here in a minute. I'm going to give your website and you tell the people what you can find over there. It's gunowners.org, folks. It's gunowners.org. We'll have a link up to it. But don't you have a list you can sign up to there and get alerts or something?
Yes, sir. The main thing we want to let people know about is that email list. It's free, and it's a way to keep posted on First Amendment and Second Amendment issues here in Washington. Those are the things that we're primarily dealing with at Gun Owners of America. So we send out email to let people know what's happening, make it real easy to, in effect, be an armchair lobbyist. And the strength of the numbers of the people getting those emails and using them to communicate with their members of Congress has actually turned legislation battles that we've been in. Even one time when the NRA was on the other side, we were able to win the day because of the large number of people that get those emails and act okay. on them.
Okay, well, we're going to have to go to a break. Folks, we'll be back in 3 minutes with a lot more to talk about. This is Pastor Dan Catlin. You're listening to Messiah's Bands Across the Hour on the American Voice Radio Network. Well, folks, always say remember to pray about a donation for our work with the homeless and poor from our mission church in Wichita, Kansas. But you know, really, most people just don't understand what we do. I mean, from a typical middle-class person to a higher income, and they look at the mission church in one of the poorest and crime-ridden parts of the city and think, and some even say it, why would anyone waste their time with those people, and especially in that part of time with all that crime at the risk of their own lives? Well, the Word shines much light on this, as Yeshua was even accused himself, and it was recorded in Matthew 11:18-19. For John came neither eating or drinking, they say. He hath the devil. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, behold, a man gluttonous, a wine bibber, a friend of publicans and sinners. But wisdom is justified by his children. He spent his time among those that needed him as he came to the lost. So what better place could we be than where Messiah was among the sinners? It's also recorded that Yeshua himself pointed to the least of these. As recorded in Matthew 31-46, it says, when the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the angels with him, then he shall sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all the nations, and he shall separate them one from another as a shepherd divided his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand and the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come, you blessed my father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you and from the foundation of the world. For I was a hungered and you gave me meat. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. Naked, you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw thee a hungered and fed thee, or thirsty and gave thee drink? When saw thee a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? Or when saw thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, verily I say unto you, insomuch as you have done it unto one of the least of my brethren, you have done it unto me. Then he shall also say unto them on the left hand, depart from me, you cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was a hungered, and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you took me not in. Naked, you clothed me not. Sick and in prison, and you didn't visit me. Then shall they also answer unto him, saying, Lord, when saw thee a hungered, a thirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, verily I say unto you, insomuch as you did it not to the one of the least of these, you did it not unto me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. The Word also tells us that he told his believers, called his believers his friends. And this is what John said about that. As recorded in John 15, he says, love, greater love had no man than he lay down his life for his friends. Indeed, lay down his life for his friends. So do you think that there's no saved among the poor? So his friends are there too. They are your friends also. They are your neighbors. Tuesday, this young lady was facing a very severe medical problem on Wednesday morning, and she came over to me, and I could feel and see she was just a complete mess. She started to talk, but she could only cry. Well, I hugged her until she calmed down a bit, and then I anointed her with oil. She cried as I prayed, but the Spirit came over here, and she calmed down. She stopped crying and was so thankful for the prayer. She came to me because she trusted me, because that comes from all the other things we do. You see, I could not go on. I could go on and on and on, but I don't have the time, folks. So pray about a donation for the Wichita Mission Churches. We are the last hope for so many. And folks, we are responsible to care one for another as we are our brother's keepers. All donations, no matter what size, helps. And the Father notices all donations that come from where? Your heart. If you don't wish to help with the poor, consider a donation for radio airtime, as airtime isn't free, and as you know, Messiah's Branch doesn't sell anything, and donations is what keeps us on the air. You can donate online or mail a check or money order, and you can find all this information at prophecyhour.com. And now we're talking about gun rights and a lot of other things with somebody that really knows about it. We're talking with Larry Pratt of Gun Owners of America. You there with me, Larry? Did I lose it, Larry? Hello? Well, we might have a short glitch here. We may have lost Larry Pratt, but I'm getting ready to see that right now. I'm getting a message typed over to me. Anyway, but folks, really, back to the Mission Church for a minute, at least until we get Larry, you know. Pray about it. we really do need your help. Thanksgiving's coming up, and we need all the fixings and trimmings for Thanksgiving. But, you know, we risk our life. Just, you know, here's one of the ways I risk my life. You know, at 4:30 in the morning out here in the Flint Hills, and that's the time that I come home from the mission church, it's really dangerous out because there are so many deer out there. And, you know, Friday, again, I just about lost my vehicle because of hitting a deer. You know, most people wouldn't. Anyway, we've got Larry back on. Larry, are you there with me now?
I am with you, sir. Yes.
No, I wasn't done with you. I really wanted you to talk about this other thing that's really important. Why everybody's got their eyes on the federal election. You know, in eight states, they're trying to pass tougher laws on gun rights. And that's kind of amazing because usually there's some other measures, you know, to give us more gun rights. Anyway, what do you think?
Well, I do know that there are some of those initiatives underway. Unhappily, because of our size, we're not able to focus on things much outside of Washington. And so our concerns have primarily been at the federal level. Yes, there's George Soros has been pouring in money to try to influence elections. In fact, he's instigated initiatives in a number of states, as you say, to in one way or another go after the Second Amendment. I think that he's a pretty significant opponent. We've been winning some significant victories at the federal court level, but he's been coming in through the back door and trying to hit us at the local level. One where we were able to see him defeated, very significant race, I think, was in Detroit, and in Milwaukee County. There's a sheriff that's their chief law enforcement officer, and this sheriff has run in the Democrat primary because the Republicans are just so insignificant in that pretty good-sized city. And so he's run as a Democrat, and he's gotten elected. And that was a battle royal in the last primary. But happily, this guy that's emerged as kind of America's sheriff, black guy with a white hat, has still been walking tall, and we're just thrilled that this guy's been able to do what he's been doing at the local level, because Soros dumped in and Blumenthal, the former New York City mayor, dumped in a lot of money to try to beat this sheriff. So we're hopeful that
Soros, he's not an American citizen. This money is basically foreign money. I guess it's not illegal for him to do it, but, you know, this man is so trying to influence our country with open borders and everything else. Hillary Clinton's daughter, isn't she married to his nephew, I think?
Well, yeah, you're right about Soros. He was born in Hungary, and whatever his legal nationality is, I don't think he really identifies with any country. He looks at himself as a change agent extraordinaire, and he's been working to bring communism and statism and Marxism to every place he can possibly have any impact with all of his money. And we've just been very blessed that whether it's Mr. Blumenthal, Michael. I'm pretty tired tonight. I can't think of names. But the former mayor of New York City, the billionaire,
has been unsuccessful. And that's an interesting rebuff that he has gotten, that all of his money has not been that helpful to his cause. And I'm encouraged, and I think maybe what we're going to see, what I'm beginning to think is possibly going to be the outcome in the presidential race, is a fairly comfortable victory by Donald Trump, maybe somewhat similar to what Ronald Reagan had back in 1980. And if that's the case, it might be more analogous, because both of them were showing very weak leads or somewhat behind in these national polls. And then all of a sudden, kaboom, on election day, a victory that was strong enough that even the left, even the Democrat Party, with all of the cheating that they are so adept at, just wasn't going to be enough, and they had to, however begrudgingly, accept the victory. And I'm hoping that that could happen with Donald Trump, even as it happened with the Brexit vote in England, where the polls showed that was going to lose, and it ended up winning well outside the margin of error of a poll. The polls either cannot or will not show who is actually going to vote. And that makes all of the difference. And that's going to have an impact up and down the line, not just in the presidential election, but it's going to have an impact at the congressional level and at the state level. And a lot of races that probably none of us are paying any attention to, but the folks running in those contests may win or lose based on the tide that is generated by the presidential election. I'm just cautiously optimistic that we're going to see a real rejection of the media, which has decided that Donald Trump is the worst thing ever. And if Donald Trump wins, it'll, among other things, be a very sharp rebuke of the media.
Well, the media needs to be rebuked. I mean, our founding fathers, I think, considered the media another part, basically, of our government, so to speak, in the fact that it would be we the people. They would be unbiased. They would report what was wrong, and then we the people would rise up. But the media is more like something out of George Orwell's 1984 with doublespeak than it is anything else, I think.
It's a serious problem, and anybody that's running for office has to be prepared to contend with it. It's a fact of life. I don't like it, but that just has to be part of a candidate's calculation, how he's going to deal with that, how he's going to get his message out in spite of the media. And that was one of the strengths that Ronald Reagan had. He was such a potent communicator that with that one line in the debate with Bush the first in New Hampshire, he may have won the election. They were having a fight over how the debate was to be conducted, and finally Reagan grabbed the microphone and said, "Well, I paid for this microphone, and we're going to do it this way."
Yeah, absolutely. That was a great moment. I know, and there's so many young people that don't see that. That's really where I think a lot of our problem has been, is that it seems that the liberals have pretty much taken over much of the colleges and things, and so and in the schools the same way. And so our youth, that is where my worry is the youth. They just don't, they're not getting history, and they're being fed a lot of lies with history. And so, we need to be diligent and make sure that we teach our children outside the school. What do you think?
Yes, that is a parental responsibility that cannot be, however much we may be too tired to try to counteract, we've got to take an active role in that process, or else the kids will be taken right out from underneath us. So it's a constant battle, but we've got to fight that same fight with our own minds, because to the extent that we watch any of the normal average standard evening news or read newspapers, which, by the way, the latter is a declining event in most people's lives, but to that extent we can be influenced by the information that we're allowing to come into our head. And it seems to me that we've got to have the mental discipline to, you know, we all should be from Missouri. Well, show me. We'll prove it.
Yeah.
I don't understand. How does that work now? And just keep asking those kinds of questions, not taking anything for granted. And I think we'll be a lot more resistant to the kind of propaganda that comes out of the media, because any notion that it's a news reporting media is by and large just not what is happening.
No, not at all. Not at all. That's absolute. And that's the problem with, you know, so many hardworking Americans, you know, if they find any time preventers from having to work a couple of jobs, you know, to keep a roof over their family's head because the wonderful work week that's been cut down to 30 hours for so many Americans is the fact that they come home, they might, you know, they sit down and maybe relax just a little while before they have dinner and maybe get, what, 15, 20 minutes of the news. And, you know, that 15, 20 minutes of news shapes their worldview. And there, you just can't get it from broadcast TV. You can't get it from the normal places. I used to have a lot of faith in Fox News until this election. This election, if nothing else, really revealed the true colors of so many people. I was just amazed. I had a lot more encouragement over Fox, but I still like people like Hannity and a couple of the others. But for the most part, they were in the tank too. Back to you.
That's right. And I think it's very helpful that we do realize that, and just having said it helps to make sure that we don't let our mind be on vacation when we, you know, it's one thing to relax the body before or after dinner when getting home from work, but the mind shouldn't be put into neutral until we go to sleep.
Right. Well, one, probably the last question, we've got about 4 minutes. What if Hillary gets elected? I know there's going to be a lot of disenchanted people, and there's going to be a lot of things coming against gun owners. What words do you have to gun owners if Hillary gets elected?
Well, I think we need to be willing to ask some very pointed questions. Are you really talking about confiscating firearms, Mrs. Clinton? Are you going to confiscate Americans' firearms? On what legal basis? And are you going to be the one knocking on the door? And if not, and you give an order, how many of the police do you really think are going to do that? Personally, I don't think that there would be more than a handful of police that would actually carry out some kind of an order, be it one given by a governor or some federal overlord.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see that America is yet at a point where there would be that many in the police agencies of the country that would do something like that. And mm-hmm. That's a real problem. That's why the president has been gutting the military. I think that's one of the major reasons why he's been doing that, because he knows that if there's one institution in our country that tends to be pro-constitutional, it is the military, because they take an oath to uphold the Constitution, not
right,
to defend whoever's the president. And if he can somehow break the back of that allegiance to the Constitution and make himself and other politicians the one to whom allegiance is owed, then I think he's gone a long way to pulling off the dream of gun control advocates in this country. But until then, I just don't see them being able to do the kind of significant roundup of people's guns that they would like, that they would really need if they're going to effectively control the country that way.
Right. You know, and that's what I've been saying for years. You know, I do a prophetic program, and I have people telling me, I hear for years, oh, the UN's going to come take your guns. Really, they can't whip their way out of a wet paper bag, let alone come take an American gun. But who would do it? There isn't anybody. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I'm with you. Who would do it? They don't have anybody to do it.
They certainly don't have that many. I'm sure there would be some, because you can't speak with 100% certainty about everybody in a large universe of people. But overall, I think they would almost be frightened themselves when they realize that, the whole state police department of New York has got the blue flu today, and this was the day they were supposed to go out and grab the guns. That, I think, is a real possibility.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Larry, I really appreciate you being on with me, and your website, of course, is gunowners.org, gunowners.org, and they need to go there and get that email, right?
Yes, sir. It's a freebie, and it really has empowered people to influence the Congress.
All right, well, folks, thanks for being on with me, Larry, and we'll do it again sometime, and we'll see you again. I really appreciate your work. Thank you, brother.
It's good to be back on with you. Thank you.
All right, you be blessed. Bye-bye. Well, folks, that was Larry Pratt, Gun Owners of America. Larry's been around a long time, and he's still hardworking, and that's what we should do. We shouldn't sit back and rest. We need to be hardworking. We need to get out and vote. And then if the election doesn't go our way, we still need to be persistent in these things because, you know, while Larry says that nobody can, I mean, not nobody, but like he says, there's not enough people to come out and do it. It could very well cause a civil war in this country that would rip us down the middle. And it isn't so much that, you know, it is guns, but guns is what made us free and keeps us free. They can't force us to do something if we've got guns. And, you know, so you need to pray about it. You make sure, and you folks out there, this is probably, I'm going to have one more program tonight, the last time I'll talk to you for the election. Remember, forget about the garbage about Trump, but you need to think about it in this manner. Do you want abortion to get worse? Do you want gun legislation to get worse? Do you want a Supreme Court that is totally liberal, that lets all the men in your children's bathrooms? And so on and so forth. Right now, there are churches fighting for their lives because they're being sued because the minister did not want to call a man dressed up as a female. And so our Christian rights are on the line. And this is probably the most important election. I know it's probably the most important election of America to date because there may not be an America, as you say. Hillary will sell it out just like she sold it out when she was Secretary of State. So you must get out and vote. And, you know, it isn't the lesser of two evils, because if you vote for Hillary, you are voting for Hillary, for evil. And if you don't vote, it's still the same thing. You're allowing it. Yeah, they can steal the election, just like it was pointed out. Florida, which is a critical state, that was decided with about 500 votes last time. Well, is you're going to be one of those 500 votes that decide it this time, but let's decide it for the right way. There's already massive voter fraud all over. But pray, because if God's for Trump, nothing can stand against it. Anyway, make sure you tune in an hour from now. Pray about supporting the Wichita Mission Church. Come back and talk to me in an hour from now. But remember, really, there is only one God. He is your Father. He's a God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His son is Yeshua HaMashiach. He gave his life for repentant sins, and he rose after 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. And through him, and only through him, is the way to the Father. Remember, always, always, always be a blessing to others. If you're not a blessing to others, how can you say that you're saved? If Yeshua is in you, you will be a blessing to others. You have to be a blessing to others. Pray for the priests of Jerusalem. That's like praying for Messiah's return, because there'll never be peace in Jerusalem, or for that matter, anywhere, until Yeshua returns. And believe me, I believe that it's within your lifetime. We are in that time. And Lord our God, Father, King, Universe, asking Yeshua HaMashiach's name, Father, would you please bless and keep them, and let your face shine upon them, and please be gracious to them, and give them peace like no one or nothing else can. Until an hour from now, this is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time for Messiah's Branch.